The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next hour I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com. Or call 919-875-8889. Today's edition of Time Magazine is dated March 27/April 3, 2023. Time in large block lettering is at the heading of this page in white. As usual, the front cover is bordered in red with a narrow inner border of white. The word is superimposed upon a cloudy blue background with pyramids, three, in the foreground, plus lots of sand, which appears to have been raked to perfection. The travel issue, the world's greatest places, I will include some, but not all of those. And at the top left-hand corner, the edge says our 100th year, referring to Time Magazine. The first article is entitled Clockwise, beneath the heading Society. After 3 years of pandemic, our relationship with time has changed. That's time, lowercase. Maybe for the Better, by Lily Rothman. It was not long after the pandemic began that people around the world started to notice something weird was going on. As the rhythms of daily life changed, some people's days seemed to run together. Others felt theirs stretched on indefinitely. The sense of what an hour felt like was corroding. News outlets filled with attempts to explain what was happening. Ruth Ogden, an experimental psychologist who studies time perception at Liverpool John Moores University in the UK, says she had only ever gotten maybe one interview request before the pandemic and has since received at least 100. And while the study of time is certainly not new, she says the volume and pace of academic publication on the topic seem to have increased too. Studies published since early 2020 have suggested, in no particular order, dragonflies process the movement of time very quickly, while starfish do so slowly. Virtual reality and ADHD are both linked to difficulty judging how much time has passed. Time flies when you're making eye contact and seems to drag when you're guilty of hiding something. And the International Bureau of Weights and Measures is even in the course of redefining the second, though that one is a coincidence. Another attempt to get to the bottom of things has just arrived in Saving Time, Discovering a Life Beyond the Clock. A new book in which artist Jenny Odell follows the threads she plucked in her best-selling 2019 debut, How to Do Nothing, which found an eager audience in people looking for ways to shore up their souls against the drain of productivity culture, and arrives at a sweeping yet personal challenge to assumptions Western society makes about the relationships between individuals and the finite hours in a given day. COVID-19 was not the original impetus for the project. She says her interest was sparked when she kept hearing the odd complaint from readers. They wanted to do nothing, but simply couldn't find the time. Still, the pandemic not only provided a jolt to her writing process. If you're trying to blow up assumptions about time use, there's nothing like a worldwide shift in the way people spend their days to help the project along, but also helped create a world particularly eager to join in her reexamination. Lockdowns ravage the routines by which we used to define our hours. What had once seemed as sure as the ticking of a clock was exposed as mere social construct. And then there was the virus itself. Everyone was faced with deaths, and really had that in their face every day, Odell theorizes. So the question of how do I spend my time, or what is my relationship to time, becomes a lot more urgent. Almost exactly 3 years after the WHO declared a pandemic, with so many of the lifestyle changes of COVID-19 reverting to the previous status quo, Odell's book arrives at what could be a turning point. The pandemic created a window in which almost everything, from office culture to trust in the government, could be up for debate. Time itself was no exception, which for many represented a major shift, the realization that decisions made by mere humans can shape something so fundamental. And once you have realized it, you also know you have some control over your own experience of it. Now, in the return to normal, we will find out if what we learned will stick and perhaps give us new models for a happier relationship with time. To be sure, time in a physics sense rather than a psychology sense is a different story. There, it takes something like a black hole, not a lockdown, to mix things up. Perhaps fittingly then, Carlo Rovelli, the Italian physicist and author behind 2017's The Order of Time, says he does not see the past few years as likely to have changed much in this area. And if widespread reflection did have an impact, he does not see that lasting once the crisis passes. But that reversion, others argue, is not a foregone conclusion. I think people do not quickly forget there was a 1 to 3 year period of their lives where they lived in a very different way than before, says Oliver Berkeman, author of the popular 2021 book, 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. A 5% difference in how you spend your time as a result of an experience like the pandemic is huge. Which way does Odell think things will break? Only time will tell, she deadpans, but adds, I do think there are certain things. Once you have seen them, you cannot unsee them. What Odell cannot unsee is the fact that the pre-pandemic mainstream Western way of thinking about time is not the only way. Her conclusion after studying how those norms came about and how they are put to use today is that time is not so much money but power. When people say they don't have time, what they mean is they do not have control. That lack of autonomy may come from a demanding boss, an internal voice, or existential level problems like climate anxiety. Odell uses the concept of a Zeitgeber, from the German for time giver, to discuss the systems that determine how our experiences of time are structured. The examples she gives range from a child's school schedule to the user experience design of a gig work app. One way for the powerless to find some control, she posits, is to reject the most basic assumptions of the system that keeps them down. In indigenous societies, for example, she finds alternatives to the kind of clock-based living that can feel natural but is not. In fact, she believes rigid ways of thinking about the future are holding us back from productive attitudes toward the fate of the planet. Her own epiphany during the pandemic was that her time was not so much hers as it was created within relationships. One clear example she cites in the book is the siesta, a time use norm that exists only as long as the culture decides collectively that it should. She pushed herself, while acknowledging the privilege of being able to do so, to see hours, H-O-U-R-S, not as a personal resource to expend, but as a material that was molded by the way she and others chose together to use it. It was almost as if a grid had been lifted off the topography of time, she recalls. Of course, Odell was not the only one encountering a new experience of time. Researchers, like Ogden, the psychologist, moved their work outside the lab because of COVID-19 and took advantage of the unprecedented moment to conduct studies all over the world, asking people how the pandemic affected their impressions of time. The fact that having your life messed with can alter the experience of time's passage is not a new revelation. As Ogden pointed out in one paper that came out of her work during this period, decades of studies, including of families locked in fallout shelters during the 1960s, confirmed life feels different if you stop being told what time it is. But, she argues, the pandemic was the first significant proof that it does not take a nuclear bunker to see that effect. You can be in your home with your roommate, the clock on your microwave glowing, your inbox filling with emails, and still feel the hours have come unglued from expectation. And those studies arrived just at a moment when people were inclined to be interested in the results. That's because, Ogden suggests, you had this period of time in which life stopped, but time continued. And I think that got us all much more aware of the idea that time is finite and it is valuable. And when it is lost, or when you can't control it, it feels weird, and you want to know why it feels weird. That said, this shift may not have happened were it not for a conference held years before the pandemic, when Mark Whitman, a cognitive neuroscientist at the Institute for Frontier Areas of Psychology and Mental Health in Freiburg, Germany, was a doctoral student a few decades back. He says even a major neuroscience or psychology conference might have just one symposium or presentation related to time. Then about a decade ago, the EU supported a networking drive that brought together time and timing scholars across countries and disciplines. It all culminated in 2014 in Corfu, Greece, at the first international conference on timing and time perception. Since then, Whitman says, there's been a snowball effect of interest. More people are getting professorships related to their focus on time perception, and those professors have students, and those students become professors who study new aspects of time. Argyro Vatakis, an experimental psychologist at Pantheon University in Athens and an organizer of that Corfu conference, says the biggest change in the past decade is an increase in research that focuses on questions relevant to everyday life. The pandemic only furthered that trend. Now the fact that we lose track of time, or time seems to pass fast or slow, she says, became on the forefront of what people were talking about. Case in point, Whitman and Vatakis are among the 32 contributors to the Blur's Day database, which compiles survey results from nearly 3,000 people in 9 countries who were asked about their experience of time during the COVID-19 pandemic. Those studies confirmed, among other findings, that the less isolated individuals felt during lockdown, the closer in time past and future events seem to be. In other words, isolation makes time drag. In the absence of commutes, many of us learned something similar to Odell's takeaway, that our days can be shaped instead by community, and maybe that's a better way to live. Of course, knowing that the brain's experience of time can be shaped by our relationships does not necessarily mean it is easy to reset our internal clocks. If you do not feel in control of your time, that is not necessarily your fault. Where Odell concerns herself with the systemic societal and economic structures that constrain us, Ogden cautions the way trauma alters one's experience of time's passage is a biological process that cannot be self-helped away. That said, there are certain things people who spend all day thinking about time do to seize what control they can over it. Ogden, for one, finds comfort in using her knowledge of the fallibility of time perception to remind herself negative periods came to an end faster than it perhaps seemed they did. Whitman says he's more aware of the way breaking out of one's emotional routine can keep it from feeling as if the fun times are flying by too quickly. Looking for additional depth in your feelings, he says, can create the kind of variety that can make a good moment seem to have lasted. Vatakas, for her part, hopes her current research project, meant to figure out how to purposefully modulate our experience of time in order to increase well-being, allows us to use our knowledge of time's malleability to live better lives, rather than suffering passively the fickleness of the clock. And with the Blur's Day data available online, there is hope that this era's trove of studies will inform time perception research for years to come. As for Jenny O'Dell, she's come out of the project of saving time, preaching a kind of mindfulness marked by a loving, curious, fascinated feeling of interest in time. As she puts it, living in the now without thinking about it so much that it cannot be enjoyed. Seeing time as a series of moments, each as rich as the meaning we put into it. She finds balance in nature, in collective action, in friendship, appropriate for someone who now defines time as both the context for and the output of relationships. Maintaining that perspective is anything but simple, and it is sure to only get harder as the gravity of the pre-pandemic status quo gets stronger, but maybe it will be easier if we know we are not alone in the quest. Together, it turns out, we can make time for ourselves. Turning the page to the mailman, that's M-A-I-L, space, man, initially cast as a Trumpian villain, Louis DeJoy, D-E-J-O-Y, is delivering for the Postal Service and Democrats by Eric Cortaleza. This is a long article that will be abridged. Louis DeJoy thought his workday was done as he arrived home one evening in February 2022. The Postmaster General was locked in a grueling, months-long battle with Congress over a bill to shake up the Postal Service. But as he settled in, his cell phone rang, and pulling it out, he saw who was calling and could already guess why. It was Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. The second most powerful Democrat in America wanted to know how the whip count was coming. As it happened, the count was coming along very nicely. DeJoy may be best known as the Trump-era GOP mega donor, the left accused of meddling with mail-in voting to subvert the 2020 election. But by the time Schumer called him on that frigid winter night, DeJoy was on his way to persuading congressional Republicans, 120 in the House and 29 in the Senate, to buy into a lengthy Democratic wish list of postal reforms. When President Joe Biden signed the landmark legislation into law 2 months later, it guaranteed a union-friendly version of six-day mail service and stabilized health coverage for the 650,000 USPS employees. There's no way we could have gotten the votes without Louis DeJoy, says Jim Sauber, chief of staff for the National Association of Letter Carriers at the time. That's for sure. The notion that DeJoy, 65, would help advance a key Democratic agenda item would have seemed unfathomable a few years ago, but to the astonishment of many in Washington, the man Democrats once denounced as a threat to American democracy has become one of their most important allies in government. Defying the far right, he delivered more than 500 million COVID-19 test kits to Americans in the winter of 2022. crossing conservatives last December, he agreed to transition the Postal Service's entire fleet to electric vehicles by 2026. DeJoy's capstone collaboration with Democrats was the Postal Service Reform Act, which is arguably the most bipartisan piece of major legislation in the Biden era, drawing more than twice as many GOP Senate votes as the $1 trillion infrastructure bill. DeJoy may be the only person on earth who could have delivered these wins for America's beloved, beleaguered agency. That is partly because of the perverse credibility his association with former President Donald Trump and the scandalous 2020 headlines give him with Republicans. It is also his stubborn insistence that he was not going to allow allegations levied against him in the thick of an inflammatory political season to define him. Sitting at a long oak table above a 4,000-square-foot Postal Service processing center outside Atlanta in February, DeJoy, sporting a tailored blue suit and a shiny silver Rolex, ticks off in his heavy Brooklyn accent the details of his demonization: ad hominem attacks in the media, congressional scrutiny, lawsuits, federal investigations. Even his children needed a security detail while they were off at college. It was hell, he says, but not enough to make him quit. I would not want to live the rest of my life if I walked away because of this bullshit, he says. It is that simple. He had other reasons for staying, too. His Nixon to China-like efforts on the postal reform bill helped DeJoy secure a broad mandate to transform the agency, drawing on his decades as a business executive when he built and sold a logistics firm worth north of $600 million, DeJoy is enacting a 10-year plan, apart from the reforms, that aims to remake a delivery service that deals increasingly less with traditional mail and more with packages. The plan grows the agency, building new processing centers and centralizing the delivery network. It converts more than 100,000 part-time employees to full-time. It adds new services, such as partnerships with local retailers to help them compete with Amazon. These potentially dramatic changes are a chief reason why the postal unions have embraced the self-made man who shares some of their blue-collar roots. Still, it will not be easy. DeJoy is a prickly but flexible businessman who has at times struggled to adapt to operating within the constraints of a government bureaucracy. When he ordered postal trucks to run on time in early July 2020, he set off a chain of events that led to a slowdown of mail delivery for weeks as trucks left their depots without any mail. The misstep helped fuel reports of attempts to undermine the 2020 election, reports that proved to be erroneous but continue to fuel distrust of him among progressives. Stopping for a moment to tell you about a photo, it's full page, of Mr. DeJoy in front of a big, it looks like a box cutter, but I think it's a fancy forklift. It says United States Postal Service on the side of a huge carton that's nearly as tall as he is. He is standing there in his tailored blue suit with a white shirt and a red figured tie. He's almost bald. What little bit of hair I see is either blonde or gray. And he's smiling, and he has darkish eyes. I'm unsure of the color. And one sees just the edge of that shiny Rolex beneath the cuff of his left suit coat arm. Okay, returning to the article, while the unions and the Biden-appointed Democratic majority on the USPS Board of Governors have bought into his plan, there remains fierce resistance in Congress, largely because it raises rates and relies more on trucks than planes to move mail, thereby slowing down the delivery of some first-class mail. He's faced multiple ethic probes, all of which appear to have been dropped, and there are plenty of Republicans who still would like to see the post office die through privatization. That remains a real possibility. When DeJoy started, the USPS was months away from running out of money. His mission, he says, is to make the Postal Service not only more efficient, but eventually profitable, something it has not been since 2006, and to beat out FedEx and UPS, private delivery firms that pose an existential threat, says DeJoy. That's what I'm trying to do, to set the organization up to compete. He has a personal stake in the effort. He is fighting for redemption, says Ron Blum, a former Democratic member of the USPS Board of Governors. That is what he wants you to write whenever he rides off into the sunset, that he executed the greatest corporate turnaround in history. Skipping forward now to the last column and a half of this lengthy article. In the Senate, DeJoy kept in regular touch with Schumer and the bill's two co-sponsors, Democrat Gary Peters of Michigan and Republican Rob Portman of Ohio. Blum, a former USPS Board of Governors member, remembers Peters telling him, "I cannot get the Republican votes without DeJoy." It passed the 50-50 Senate with 79 votes. DeJoy's pivotal role in breaking a 20-year logjam did not earn him an embrace from Biden. The White House did not invite him to the bill signing ceremony until the night before. The event itself would leave the public with no clue that the postmaster had anything to do with the bill. DeJoy was not mentioned in the president's remarks and was not on stage for the signing. He was sitting in the back of the room. But DeJoy is not one for hard feelings. 6 months later, after Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, allocating $3 billion to help the Postal Service go electric, he reached out to John Podesta, Biden's climate advisor. By Christmas 2022, they announced a plan for the USPS to fully electrify in 4 years. Given the earlier track record, I did not know what to expect, says Podesta. We ended up, I think, respecting one another. He walked into an institution that had a lot of issues, but I think he's tackled them in a way that has brought over his skeptics, of which I probably counted myself among them. There have been other victories and vindications. Last winter, he worked with the White House to deliver 500,000 COVID-19 test kits to Americans across the country. Roughly 60% of the orders were filled within 24 hours, 90% within 48 hours, and there's no longer an ethical cloud hanging over his head. Both the Federal Election Commission and the FBI closed investigations into him related to campaign contributions, and the USPS Inspector General said he met all applicable ethics requirements related to disclosure, recusal, and divestment pertaining to his holdings with Postal Service contractors upon taking the job. All the while, DeJoy's 10-year plan to save the USPS is in motion. The new million-square-foot regional processing plant near Atlanta, set to open next year, is one of 60 such facilities he aims to launch. How long DeJoy will be there to oversee the plan is another matter. His tenure as Postmaster General is up to the board and him. DeJoy has his own metrics for success. Saving the USPS may be the only way to transcend his 2020 infamy. I hope all this stupid nonsense stuff is not on my obituary, he says. In the next 2 or 3 years, he says, the USPS may be transformed enough for him to move on. After that, I don't know if it's my last rodeo, says DeJoy. I feel pretty young. I got other things to do. From the brief news, business, luxury watches search for a different kind of green, by Robin Swithenbank. As watchmakers from around the world gathered in late March in Geneva for one of the industry's biggest events, the Watches and Wonders Fair, Switzerland-based Oris, O-R-I-S, will announce a luxury diver's watch with a swirly blue and green dial. There's nothing remarkable in that except the dial of the Oris X bracelet, 2,350 Swiss francs, or $2,508, is made of upcycled ghost fishing nets recovered from the ocean. Luxury watches have always been about communicating more than time, and what this one gets across is its maker's sustainability program. Oris became climate neutral in 2021 and frequently collaborates with conservation organizations. It stands out against others in the Swiss watch industry, which have been slow to respond to consumer appetite for products with a strong environmental profile. The scale of the ambivalence was exposed 5 years ago when the Worldwide Fund for Nature, WWF, published a report examining Swiss watchmaking's social and environmental impact, concluding it does not meet good environmental standards. Well-known names like Rolex, Omega, and Patek Philippe were classified as latecomers and non-transparent, while only IWC received praise. Oris was not included in the report. This could prove a thorn in the industry's side, Deloitte's 2022 annual report on the Swiss watch industry found. Sustainability and environmental impact is now the third most powerful driver behind a watch purchase, after brand and price, for buyers in China, the world's second largest importer of Swiss watches. With climate-conscious millennial and Gen Z consumers now purchasing luxury in greater numbers, the trend will likely gather momentum. But the luxury watch industry appears to be waking up. Strategies vary. Last year, IWC hired supermodel Gisele Bündchen as an environmental and community projects advisor. Chopard's watches contain only so-called ethical gold from traceable sources, while Panerai and Breitling have replaced wooden boxes with lower-impact packaging. Damien Oetli, that's O-E-T-T-L-I, head of the markets team at WWF Switzerland, says the industry has started to take the first steps to address sustainability issues, but that too many brands are still only paying lip service to the problem. The watch sector has recovered well from the pandemic, with record exports last year, but its growth has hampered its sustainability efforts. Richemont, parent company of Cartier and Montblanc, said in its 2022 sustainability report its emissions had increased from the prior year. For consumers, luxury watches with clear sustainability efforts remain scarce. Some brands, like Oris, have used recycled materials. 2 years ago, Panerai said it had set a record for the watch with the most recycled components, claiming the submersible E-Lab ID was 98.6% recycled by weight. Ulysse Nardin used recycled fishing nets for the Ocean Race Divers case. Both were limited in production. A more common approach for companies is to partner with an environmental project. Omega, for example, has helped fund conservation projects with the Good Planet Foundation, among other initiatives. In the fall, Breitling used its Super Chronomat Origins to spearhead its switch to what it calls artisanal gold and lab-grown diamonds by the end of 2025. These will be responsibly sourced from accredited suppliers and backed by end-to-end traceability, says CEO Georges Kern. As a watchmaker, this is where we can use our influence. Other brands are teaming up. Last April, Cartier and luxury group Kering, K-E-R-I-N-G, established the Watch and Jewelry Initiative 2030. The concept is similar to the Fashion Pact of 2019, which saw more than 250 companies commit to science-based targets and meeting the goals of the 2015 Paris Agreement. Chanel, Gucci, IWC, and Jaeger-LeCoultre are among its 25 member brands. All have signed up to the UN's 17 Sustainable Development Goals. One thing brands engaged in sustainability agree on is their hold over consumers. We have to reduce our footprint, says Panerai CEO Jean-Marc Pontruy, but also to educate and convince the wider public so that they become part of the change. Moving on now to the travel sector. Let me find this on the cover. It says, the world's greatest places. Well, I've chosen eight of what Time states to be the world's greatest places, at least for this issue in March of 2023. And first is Ladakh, India. L-A-D-A-K-H, India. With its astonishing alpine landscapes and Tibetan Buddhist culture, Ladakh, in the farthest-flung part of North India, has enough wonders to warrant multiple visits. In 2023, India designated its first dark sky reserve in Hanli, H-A-N-L-E, village, about 168 miles southeast of Leh, L-E-H, Ladakh's capital. The village has roughly 270 clear nights a year, making it ideal for astronomical splendor. The reserve spans 414 square miles and envelops much of the Shangtang Wildlife Sanctuary. The launch of a new helicopter service in summer 2022 has reduced the travel time between major destinations in Ladakh, including Leh, Zanskar, Kargil, and Ross, from 5 to 12 hours by car to just 45 minutes. In Leh, visit legendary Delhi Eateries Karim's, known for its Mughlai menu of grilled meats and Natu's Sweets, which both opened outlets in 2022. Café Montaigne, also new last year, offers tempura fried prawns with sea buckthorn, fondue, and spicy fried chicken. For those heading to Turtuk village, about a five-hour drive from Leh, don't miss the Farmer's House Café, another new eatery. Try the sushi, Himalayan herb salad with local cheese, or hand-rolled pasta with walnut sauce. Bookend your adventures with a stay in one of the region's new sustainable properties, Dholkar in Leh, the Kayagar Hotel in Nubra Valley, and Shell Ladakh, a 30-minute drive from Leh Airport. That column was written by Poonam Binayak. Dakar, D-A-K-A-R, Senegal. Senegal bursts with color, from the bubblegum pink algae that dye Lake Retba to the blue and yellow minibuses Car Rapide that navigate Dakar's stylish streetscapes. So it is no wonder Africa's westernmost capital city is also a blossoming fashion capital. Arrive on Delta's direct route from New York City, then weave your way through the fabric of a city defined by its modern architecture and contemporary craftspeople. It's already old news that Chanel hosted its first runway show in Africa last December at the picturesque former Palais de Justice. In fact, Chanel never left. In January, the French luxury house opened a new exhibition space, Le 19M Dakar, within the Theodore Monod African Art Museum. The free gallery offers local artisans the opportunity to dye and weave new works on site to display alongside the museum's permanent collection. The gift shop is curated by one of the city's most influential entrepreneurs, l'artisan designer Khadija Ba, who's also behind the nearby concept shop, the Sandaga, an homage to the city's famed Sandaga market. L'Artisan is part of a new wave of Dakar women's wear labels getting worldwide acclaim and dressing celebrities. Naomi Campbell is a fan. If there is not enough room in your suitcase, pick up a steamer trunk and make the voyage home aboard one of Viking's transatlantic cruises. Chic travelers can stay at the waterfront Radisson Blue Dakar Sea Plaza, located in the Fan District on the Cape Verde Peninsula. Before you go, catch a glimpse of Black Rock, Senegal, founded by Kehin Diwali, the artist behind Barack Obama's presidential portrait. Wiley's waterfront home hosts public talks and screenings by artists in residence, like the recently Oscar-nominated filmmaker Sophia Nali Allison. Adam Robb wrote that column. Luang Prabang, Laos, Luang Prabang, Laos, a hidden paradise. Turquoise waterfalls, Buddhist temples, sunset boat trips on the Mekong are just a few of Luang Prabang's highlights. Despite its remote location in the jungled mountains of Laos, the former royal capital is not just for backpackers. After a 2-year border closure, a new $6 billion high-speed railway from China to Thailand now runs from the Chinese city of Kunming to the Laotian capital, Vientiane. The train turns the once 12-hour bus ride from Vientiane to Luang Prabang into a scenic 2-hour trip. The town boasts luxurious boutique hotels. Some, like Amantaka and Sofitel Luang Prabang, are housed in historic French colonial buildings. At Tamarind Cooking School, discover why Gordon Ramsay named Laos one of the top food destinations in the world. After mastering sticky rice, learn to grow it at the Living Land Farm. Then visit the Traditional Arts and Ethnology Center, a museum dedicated to the country's 50 ethnic groups and 160 ethnic subgroups, and tour the Free the Bears Wildlife Sanctuary, a haven to over 100 moon and sun bears rescued from poaching. That article was written by Cindy Pham. Barcelona, Spain, art history haven. Historic Barcelona is in top form this year. Antoni Gaudi's architectural marvel, the unfinished Sagrada Familia, recently completed the towers of the evangelists Luke and Mark, which join the Virgin Mary's Tower, completed in 2021. In late 2023, the towers of the evangelists John and Matthew will join the other pinnacles in lighting up the city during the Christmas season. For panoramic views of the city, visitors can climb the Apostle Towers of either the Nativity or Passion facades. By 2026, the 100th anniversary of Gaudi's death, the 566-foot-tall Jesus Christ Tower is expected to debut and complete the set of six. Beyond the much-anticipated Sagrada Familia's unveilings, 2023 marks the 50th anniversary of Pablo Picasso's death, and with it, events and exhibitions, including parallel exhibits, Museu Picasso and Fundazio Joan Miró, spotlighting the painter's lifelong friendship with fellow artist Joan Miró. The city's leading classical music concert venues, the 176-year-old Gran Teatre del Liceu, the Palau de la Música Catalana, and l'Auditori, designed by a Pritzker Prize winner, will collaborate via the Barcelona Obertura Initiative to promote Barcelona as a preeminent city for classical music performances. Visitors can stay at Casa Sagnier, the former home of architect Enric Sagnier, or Antigua Casa Buena Vista, a family restaurant since 1918, both of which have relaunched as boutique hotels. That column was written by Jessica Benavides Canepa. Aarhus, Denmark. That's A-A-R-H-U-S. The Sea and the Stars. Now, this page is blotchy with black ink, but I believe it's readable. Design-driven Aarhus has long embraced the sea, and this year even more so. In early summer, the city's harbor will transform into a maritime celebration as a host of the Ocean Race, one of the longest round-the-world sailing challenges, with in-port races and other events. Aarhus cuisine abounds with innovative seafood, including at the Michelin-starred Substance, where you can dine on lobster from the Bay of Aarhus while gazing at it. At Frederikshøj, awarded a second Michelin star in 2022, the playful cuisine might include truffles from Marcellusborg Forest or oysters from Vano Island. The ocean also frames the city's cutting-edge architecture, including Dock 1, one of the largest libraries in Scandinavia, and the Bjarke Ingels-designed harbor bath, where you can splash in floating seawater pools. Explore the history of Aarhus seafaring founders, the Vikings, at the Mizgard Museum, an architectural marvel with a grass roof. Lift your gaze to the Nordic skies at the newly reopening, beautifully restored 112-year-old Ole Rømer Observatory, or at the Aarhus Art Museum, which is crowned with a rainbow walkway by artist Olafur Eliasson. Then rise above the center of Aarhus at the Salling Department Store, which last year unveiled a magical urban garden on its rooftop terrace with sweeping city views. That article by Anna-Lisa Sorensen. Musanze, M-U-S-A-N-Z-E, Rwanda. Trek with gorillas. Musanze is the largest city in northern Rwanda and the gateway to Volcanoes National Park, home of rare mountain gorillas, which recently announced its expansion from 62 to 76 square miles by 2027, an endeavor that will reduce human-wildlife conflict by 80%. A limited number of $1,500 daily gorilla trek entry fees enable farmers and reformed gorilla poachers to make a living while not encroaching on the animals' habitats. The opening of the Ellen DeGeneres campus of the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund and its Gorilla Doctors campus, which invest in the conservation and research of endangered mountain gorillas, have brought global attention to the area. Red Rocks Rwanda, an amenity-rich nonprofit hostel, strives to connect locals and visitors through storytelling, banana beer making, and Rwandan dance. Private homestays, many of which include cooking lessons and pottery-making workshops, are arranged by the community-led nonprofit Gorilla Guardians and Musanze-based tour operator Beyond the Gorilla's Experience brings a break from all things gorilla with guided cycling and treks through Volcanoes Park. Round out the trip with a stop at the Inshuti Art Gallery. Susheta Rawal wrote that article. Phuket, P-H-U-K-E-T, Thailand. Family thrills. Thailand's most visited region, the famed beaches of Phuket, just upped its family appeal with the grand opening of Carnival Magic in September. The country's first culturally focused theme park, 40 acres sandwiched between verdant mountain and sandy shore, recreates traditional festivals and market fairs found throughout the kingdom in a dazzling array of neon lights. Kids can get their ice cream fix at Tori's, a family-run shop in the heart of Phuket town that uses ingredients like coconut milk and blue pea powder in the subtly sweet and umami-rich Bai Kho Moi. Voluntourism initiatives continue to be a priority on the island. The Phuket Elephant Sanctuary, for example, invites visitors to help feed the animals and provides education about elephant communication and behavior. Although the island is best known for its eponymous city, Phuket is drawing more visitors to its uncrowded countryside with an impressive landscape of modern luxury lodges. The new 5-star No Ku Hotel overlooking Shalong Bay, designed to blend in with the environ, was recently awarded the Green Mark Gold Award for sustainability. On the opposite end of the bay, the Ultralux V Villas, opened in 2021, is a collection of 19 standalone suites on a private hillside. And the beach bungalows of Selina Serenity Rawai Phuket provide a lower-priced option. Brad Jaffe wrote that article. Churchill, Manitoba. Northern Wonders, if you have always dreamed of seeing the Aurora Borealis, you are in luck this year as solar activity heads toward its peak. In its roughly 11-year cycle, one of the best spots to catch the northern lights is this remote Hudson Bay outpost, which sits just below the auroral oval, meaning the sky often dances to life more than 300 nights a year. Winter aurora hunting has opened up a whole new tourist season in a town that has traditionally attracted the vast majority of its visitors during the fall polar bear migration. The massive carnivores remain big business, of course, and to get travelers safely up close to them, Frontiers North Adventures recently unveiled its electric tundra buggy, a behemoth with 6-foot tires that cruises over the ice at barely a whisper. Polar bears are not the only big white animals in Churchill. Thousands of belugas enter these waters in the summer, and tour companies are finding new ways to introduce travelers to the famously vocal canaries of the sea. Frontiers North partnered with marine biologist Valeria Vergara, who studies language acquisition in baby belugas, on its new conservation journey itinerary, while Lazy Bear Expeditions is set to unveil its newest catamaran, the Matanabe, featuring 12 underwater windows for getting face to melonhead with the inquisitive cetaceans. Nicolas Dorenzo wrote that. Dijon, France. Gourmet Haven. This is one of the smallest columns. I'm going to try and read it all. Dijon has long been one of France's great gastronomic cities. While almost all its namesake mustard is now manufactured outside the city, globe-trotting gastronomes still frequent Dijon's Michelin-rated restaurants, such as William Frochot and Cibo, and the famous food market L'Aile Gourmande. In 2022, Dijon rose to further prominence with the launch of its Cité de la Gastronomie et du Vin. Inside the former Hôtel Dieu, the city's historic hospital, visitors enjoy the region's food and wine through tastings and courses at Ferrandi Paris School of Culinary Arts and École des Vins de Bourgogne, among other eateries. A pedestrian wine trail links the complex to the railway station. This milestone opening follows the launch of France's Vallée de la Gastronomie Trail from Dijon to Marseille, highlighting local producers of wine, beer, truffles, olives, cheese, and sweets along the way. New hotel openings, Saint-Anne Hotel Dijon, a Hilton Corio Collection property, and Mama Shelter Dijon, opening this summer, offer restful bases for expeditions. That was written by Lauren Jade Hill. A headline I can read, as Airbnb prices rise, hotels are having a renaissance. Here's How to Book Smarter by Armani Sied. In 15 years since its inception, Airbnb has become the travel industry's bread and butter. But once regarded as the affordable option, Airbnb prices began creeping up as the platform became more popular. Airbnb's average global price rose from $110 per night in 2020 to $137 in 2021, according to All the Rooms, which catalogs vacation rental properties. In February, Airbnb cited its average daily rate, ADR, as $153 for the last quarter of 2022. Meanwhile, in the fourth quarter of 2022, Hilton reported an ADR of $151.81, and Intercontinental Hotel Group reported $125.58. While costs are up across the board, the gap between hotels and Airbnb is closing. A spokesperson for Airbnb says Airbnb often provides more space and more amenities, and that its prices remain below those of some major hotel chains. But for travelers looking for one or two nights away, Airbnb's narrowing price advantage, plus the lack of certain hotel luxuries like reception and regular cleaning, are drawbacks. And that's just the first two paragraphs of that article, because we have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.